It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Alongside ESPN's John Anderson, here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
94 southbound, we got this crash just past 7 miles.
The power of love is a curious thing. Make a one man weep, make another man sing. Change your heart.
The best 60 minutes of your day, the John Anderson Homer Hour. Always wondering if he has something on his mind, don't know if it's salt or sugar, that he wishes to lead with. I'm thinking of starting the show each time on Tuesday with that, but we'll see. The professor decides. Professor, good afternoon. Anything that you feel you need to start with, which would tell us the importance of it?
Listen, it's sports. I don't know that anything in my life is mandatory when it comes to sports, but I am super excited. I am ready to go. I am a day early but to watch Mizorowski and Skeens. And I like that that has garnered some attention from the national media that, like, maybe we should watch these cats. And so hopefully he will pitch well. Hopefully the Brewers will acquit themselves well in front of everybody. But I just think the guy's been in and he's been electric. And the name escapes me of the fellow that he replaced in the rotation. They went to the pen and he decided, he's like, I would like to, he respectfully asked to be traded because he still thinks he can be
Aaron
a starter.
Savali.
Savali, because you know
they,
what?
They sent him to the White Sox.
Sent him back to the minors. But you're like, you watch that and you're like, it's a good thing he asked that because you watch that guy pitch twice and you're like, you're never coming back to the rotation. You know, you're not, that spot is now taken.
Yeah, you'll have to get somebody else's spot. That one's gone.
Yep. That one, if you thought maybe he was going to come up, he'll get a little taste of this thing. It might go sideways and you'll get it back. Not happening. So it's glad they accommodated him because that thing, that appears that spot is spoken for.
Yeah. The only thing that would create the possibility of it is if he walks too many hitters. I just don't think he's ever going to give up that many hits. Like he's going to have an ERA of 5. It's just not going to happen.
And listen, and that's a guy that I'm willing to be patient with. Nolan Ryan eventually harnessed it. Randy Johnson eventually harnessed it. So I know you're big on walks, whether Cheerio's not getting enough of them or this guy's giving up too many of them. I just think that I'm willing to ride out a little.
No. Yes, you're going to ride it out.
12 strikeout, 5 walk performance.
People need to know. And it doesn't mean he's going to sit down. People need to know that when he pitches, you want to watch most, while other than the smoke that he throws, the most important thing for him is to limit walks because he pitches so well. You don't have to worry about if he gives in 5 innings, if he gives up 9 hits, it's not, that's a once. But what is the only possible concern, and it doesn't mean he's not going to be very good, but the only possible concern is walking too many hitters. But so, and that was the case with Nolan Ryan. I believe it was also the case with Sandy Koufax, if we could, Don Hudson. And he certainly has more cushion in terms of the number of walks he can give up because of how well he pitches.
But, and so far, he hasn't been nearly as wild as those other guys.
Correct.
Hasn't been nearly as wild.
Yes, that's right. So that sign is good. But to understand when you have somebody of that ability and throws that hard, that's the issue. Mm-hmm. Not just with him, but everyone. So, yes, I mention it because people should be watching it. He walks a lot of people. That doesn't mean he's going to be sent down. That doesn't mean he isn't going to be great. But that's the one thing, and I'd have to check with others who have thrown over 100 because they're not. He's not the only one now. That's That's the only thing that bites you, especially with him, as well as the ball seems to move. Not just the speed of it, but the movement he has when he throws. But so if
but the good news about a guy like that, that's wild at 100, is he can get himself out. Guys that are wild at 87, you know, now you're hoping you hit into a double play or somebody rescues you.
No, they got a problem. They got a problem bigger than being wild. They aren't any good.
You can get out of a lot of your own messes if you can throw it 102.
No, we're just discussing not whether he's going to make it, but the ability for greatness. The level of greatness he achieves will be determined more than anything else by his ability to control to an appropriate level walks.
Yeah. But absolutely agree.
Agree with me. Oh, baby, I feel good when John Anderson agrees with me. Just like the case with Jackson. And I'm glad people get mad at me. There's only one player, and this is about the greatness of Jackson Chira. Not that he's going to be good. Of course he's going to be good. Not that, you know, but there's only one player where he's been this year in walks. There's only one great player in the history of baseball that was like this, and that was Roberto Clemente. It took him about 5 years to get over it. But you don't want to
give him 5 years.
Yeah.
Although he doesn't have Clemente's arm, which was apparent early.
Yes, so Clemente had other skills that were amazing in addition to his ability to hit. But again, if you have something you want to watch, like he got three walks in a game and everybody told me, and I said, yes, that's amazing. He had gone 84 plate appearances without a walk. So he needs to have those games, and anybody watching him hit can tell that, you know, he hits the ball hard. He looks like he's a pretty good hitter. That is the only thing that can prevent him and level his greatness. So,
but I would contend
that
walks are way more important in Mizorowski's case to get those under control. I think you can still, if you can hit 35, 40 bombs, you can. People are going to look a little bit of the other way on the walks. If Mizorowski's walks pile up and he can't get around them, those will be way more detrimental to his career than they will be to Churi.
Yes, but especially because, as you said, the numbers he has put up are just closer. The bad numbers that Chirio has put up are historically horrible, but it hasn't been for a whole season. So and now, you know, when he has three walks, he's good for a month. He didn't even need any more. So it's a question of me bringing it up to watch. All right, now I want to see if you agree with me on this. Marquette announced they're going to honor Tom Crean, Jarrell McNeil, and Marcus Howard at Fiserv Forum. I'm sure they're putting their number up or a number up, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they don't retire numbers anymore. Yeah. They retire jerseys. So, whatever. The others will be able to wear the numbers, whatever they put up there. Right. I believe, not the greatest, the most unique and amazing thing I have ever witnessed in a Marquette game since 1989 is Marcus Howard scoring 40 points and a half. I believe in the last 50 years of college basketball that there aren't even four other players that have done it 40 and a half against a nationally ranked team, which is what he did. You can have these games against East, West, North Carolina, Louisiana. This was against a nationally ranked team, Buffalo, coached by Oates. Not only a nationally ranked team, but a very up-and-coming. I don't believe there are four other players in the last 50 years to score 40 and a half against a nationally ranked team. Do you want to join my club? That goes 1975 on.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of some of the great stories, but yeah, I can't think of anybody that would have come close to that. So I still am not sure. I mean, basketball ranking, especially in there, is kind of iffy. But yeah, Oates had done a good job. But no, that's impressive. I'll be honest, I'm a little shocked, and maybe I'm out there. Like, I like Crean, but I don't think Crean's worthy of having.
Oh, yeah, this is terrible. All right, let me sell it. First of all, he recruited Dwayne Wade. I think if he lost every game, you'd still get up there for bringing in Dwayne Wade. And two, They went to the Final Four. They're the only team to go to the Final Four since 1977. He took a team to the Final Four, and he recruited and brought in Dwayne Wade. That puts you up there. All right? Yes, sir?
So when you hired Shaka Smart,
yeah,
what is it you would like him to do as your basketball
coach? Oh, the same. It's the same for every coach. Same for every coach. Final Four. That's how you know,
right.
That's the determining greatness. If Tom Crean had only recruited and brought in Dwayne Wade, then I think we could have a discussion. To have gotten the Final Four and provided Dwayne Wade, it's over. Should have been done years ago.
So you're telling me his career is worthy of that because he won four games in the NCAA tournament?
In one of those years, yes.
Yeah.
And and I would emphasize, you say four games, well, but nobody else has done it.
True.
Since 1977, and we are honoring Marquette. We're not honoring Duke.
I get it.
And there's
I feel like you're honoring a guy for doing the job you asked him to do. I think one can be a one-off. One can be I recruited a great player and I got in, and I don't know.
No, you recruited the greatest player. He's not just a great player.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah. I don't know that's enough to get in.
All right.
You're supposed to recruit great players.
No. No.
Supposed to go to Final Fours.
No, you're not supposed to recruit the greatest player ever. That's a slight distinction, as is getting to a Final Four. If he had recruited Travis Diener, as much as I adore Travis Diener, I'm not sure that it would be such an easy choice. Travis Diener in Final Four, we can have a discussion. Dwayne Wade in Final Four, no, you can't. He did the greatest achievement, other than winning games, of any coach in the history of the university.
We're honoring him because he recruited a guy.
Yes. No, and he recruited him well enough that he came to Marquette. Right?
Your bar is at maybe not even at basket level height.
There's no coach in Missouri that's ever as deserving for their banner as Tom Crean. I don't think anybody made the Final Four, did they?
We used to. I don't know. We used to have the distinction for the most tournament wins and the most times in the tournament without going to the Final Four.
Yes.
But no, I would tell you that Norm Stewart's a 100-time better coach than Tom Crean.
He didn't do what Tom Crean did.
He's the only coach I believe we've honored.
Yeah, and he didn't do what Tom Crean did. Like Gene Cady. It's hard for people outside of Missouri to appreciate Norm Stewart. How can you be that good and never make a Final Four? You can't.
Right. Same with Gene Cady. Gene Cady could coach circles around Tom Crean.
Yes. Kicked the butt out of Bob Knight and created one of the greatest taped halftime speeches that wasn't supposed to be taped.
So you're making the case. That's what I mean. So you're telling me now that what could be looked at as an aberration. Good for you. You won four games.
You're asking who's a better coach.
I don't look at Tom Crean as one of the great basketball coaches of all time.
I don't care. He won. The key isn't how good a coach you are. The key is what you accomplish. Do I think Norm Stewart and Gene Cady are better coaches? Yeah, it doesn't matter. What'd you do? Show me the resume. Neither of them could do as good a coach as they did as what Crean did. Neither. And in many more years. Think of how many years was Norm Stewart at Missouri?
I don't know, 28, 30, but yeah. No, I get it. Right. I just think one can be a happy accident.
Fine. Call it whatever you want. Norm Stewart was that good that year, all those years, and he could never create a happy accident.
So J.J. Spawn, because J.J. Spawn just won the U.S. Open, he won a major, he should go to the Hall of Fame.
No.
That's what you're saying.
No.
And he did better. I mean, your guy.
Are we talking about the Golf Hall of Fame or the floor, wherever he went to college Hall of Fame?
The Golf Hall of Fame.
I don't know what the standard is there. But the U.S., the winning a major gives you consideration that you wouldn't normally get. Generally, I would think, who is it, Davis Love? Does he have one? He have the PGA? Is he in the Hall of Fame?
Yes, because he won enough other stuff.
Nah. If he never won the PGA, I'm not sure he'd be in. Who's the best golfer in that never won a major?
Jeepers, I don't even know. Yeah. Probably Phil Mickelson. No.
That's nice. A little salt there. What do you have against Phil?
Oh, what do I...
Huh? Yeah, just, come on. Oh, you don't want to go. You don't want to make the salt any bigger. I mean, you just randomly brought up Phil Mickelson, who, by the way, has arguably one of the greatest major wins ever. Right? He's the oldest major winner, right? Isn't he?
No, I think no. What's remarkable about his career, and it's funny because I was playing golf with guys this weekend who agree with me that the word fraud could also be spelled with a PH in place of the F.
Really?
And
fraud. I agree totally.
He never once won the money title. He never once won Player of the Year. Now that's circumstance. You get in with Tiger, then Vijay got hot, and all those other things.
Neither of those things are important. That's in my list of the Grand Slam, which is the most unimportant thing ever, as Jack Nicklaus explained perfectly. Never thought about it once in his career. You can't have something viewed that important if Jack Nicklaus said, I never thought about it once in my career.
Yeah, but Jack, I bet Jack's changed. He says that now.
No, they interviewed him after McIlroy did it, and the announcers on the Golf Channel didn't know what to say. They just assumed he'd say it was a big deal, and he didn't. He said it wasn't a big deal. Never thought about it once as a player. Is there anything more damning to the importance of something?
He was with Barbara and six kids, and he was just trying to
make
sure all
the middle classes didn't get turned over. He never cared. What was only special was winning any major and the possibility of a Grand Slam all in 1 year, which I think should be changed, because I think if you win four in a row, I don't care if it's all in the same year. I think that should stand as special, to be, as Tiger was, the owner of all four. That's what I would change. That's a million times better than winning each major one time.
True, but it's still amazing to win all four of those, as hard as it is.
So few have done it.
I don't know that that's an accomplishment to be belittled in any way.
Just go by Jack. I got Jack. Who you got?
So one time I did an event at Firestone Country Club.
Oh, have you ever played the course?
Uh-huh.
Isn't it really, really hard?
Long and straight and hard.
Par 72, I think, one of the first ones.
I was doing it. I was hosting this deal, and they're very kind, the people that are putting on, and they put me up in there's room in the clubhouse. There's rooms in the upstairs of the clubhouse. And so I get the Nicklaus room, and I'm a Jack guy, right? I am all about him. He's my guy. And I walk in, and there are two queen beds. And there's memorabilia from all his wins, because he won at Firestone a bunch.
Yes.
Half a dozen times. And I'm like, there's two
beds. I thought every tournament they played there was like a major, because I thought that course, I wasn't a big golf knowledgeable.
Yeah, and they usually had, they didn't have any podunk tournaments there.
Right.
And so I think, golly, I wonder if Jack Nicklaus ever slept in this room. And I'm looking at the beds. And so I went to bed at midnight, and I set my alarm for 4 a.m., and then I switched and slept in the other bed until 8 a.m. so that I could sleep in both of them just in case Nicklaus had slept in one of the beds and I didn't want to guess wrong.
Come on. You're telling us the truth.
Yeah, right. I went to bed.
That's incredible.
Set the alarm.
That might be more amazing than 7, 2.5. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, set the alarm and then slept in the other bed the other half of the night so I could do that. And Jim Brown was there, and he was in a putting contest, and you know, they line you up 70 feet away, and he put it, and I was on the mic, and he put his ball down, and I just went, that's good, pick it up. But they did not allow him to win by my rules. We still allowed all the participants to putt, and despite my efforts to give Jim Brown the competition, I was foiled by the organizers.
And did I miss whether or not you know for sure that Jack slept in one of those beds?
No, I have no idea. Still have no idea. But I just didn't want to.
We got to get a follow up on that.
Yeah. I have no idea.
So, what do I have to find out? Did he ever sleep in one of the two beds?
Well, if he spent the night in the Nicklaus room in the Firestone clubhouse.
Okay, Nicklaus room in the fire. But of course, it wasn't the Nicklaus room.
Assuming he didn't sleep on the floor, he might have had a back problem and had to do that.
Hold on, make sure I have this in. The Nicklaus room in the Firestone clubhouse?
Yeah, Firestone Country Club Clubhouse.
All right, we know it wasn't the Nicholas Room probably then, but when did they... All right, I'll get you an answer. I believe, and I think you do as well, that he did. And when I find out that he did, how much will that change your life?
Not at all. I'm assuming he did. Actually, I'm like, I don't know. You know, he always traveled with Barbara, always had the kids. But I'm assuming maybe at one point he did. Went there to play before a game or something, flew in before, an important tournament. But
I will try to get Jack Nicklaus on to discuss the number of times. Pebble, what do you think the chances of that are?
Zero.
Such confidence. More John Anderson. Don't know if it'll be sugar. Don't know if it'll be salt. We got a little of both. Quarter one. Quarter two next.
It's time for Jason Wilde on the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
This is so good. Jason Wilde and 7.5. John Anderson to talk whatever they want to talk about. And I just listen. And John Anderson, the professor, goes first. Because he's always nice with the introduction.
I'm always nice. Jason, I missed you last week, but I feel like I had a good excuse. I was in Oregon at the NCAA championships.
I know you were, and I was going to say I'm not going to call you 7.5. I'm going to call you Eugene. That's what I'm going to call you now. Eugene.
I'm telling you, I don't know. Like, do you have a favorite place you like to go hang out when you're in Eugene other than your buddy's house?
Yeah, it's the what's the ice cream shop? Right by Hayward Fields.
Yeah.
Yeah. The girls would know. I can't remember it off the top of my head. But the ice cream, it's like old school, like Leon's in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Like it's an iconic type place. And so that is definitely a place. We're trying to figure out if we can get out there during the Packers bye week because the Ducks do not play either. They have a bye. But maybe their volleyball team plays, and that's something that obviously Sydney would like to see. And Maddie, being a track athlete, she wants to go see the new version of Hayward Field because we haven't been there since the renovation. They had just decided to do it. I think the last time we were there was 2019. So we got great pictures of the girls running like Steve Prefontaine past the old standings, but now the old stands. So now it's different.
Yeah, I forget the place too. I was there. I went with the four scoop sampler, which was great. And there's an excellent Italian restaurant right across the street. And I made it to track down pizza. Yeah, it's big, big. In addition
Popper,
to seeing four tracks.
Popper, something Popper. I want to say. Yeah. I'll have to look that up. I'm sure.
All that
I'm sure,
to say is,
can I put my story in about Eugene in now, or is that a violation?
No, you don't talk during this segment.
Okay, all right. I'll wait till it's over. We can do it later.
No, go ahead.
My first professional tennis match was on a satellite tour that started in Eugene, Oregon, 1974.
How'd you do?
I lost. But the Gullickson twins had been teaching, and they started back playing again. And the first thing I knew was I didn't want to play either one of them because they had to kick my butt. But I lost anyway.
Tom and Tim
from Alaska. Yep.
They're from Wisconsin, aren't they?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Fabulous. Went to Illinois State. No one to this day will ever understand why. But the important thing was, at the event, they gave all of us these new tennis shoes, canvas tennis shoes from Nike. Because that's what we thought it was Nike.
Nike.
So that was the only probably
That's amazing.
Give. Yep, 1974. Take it away. Hey, and it was Homer, because of the coach at Oregon. Right? He started the waffle. He had the waffle.
Bowerman.
Yes. And then went from that to tennis. Back, sorry.
Hey, did you catch Aaron Rodgers on McAfee today?
I did not. I never listened to him on McAfee.
Well, did you hear him talking about people who are curious about his wife?
He's
did you
amazing.
Hear that clip?
He's amazing, amazing. He comes on the show for 2 hours every week to talk about anything. Doesn't have to be about football. And then is upset if people then act like they want to know too much about him. Only he can do that. But I want to give him credit. He's pulled it off 4.5 months now.
No,
nobody
hasn't.
Knows who it is, who his wife
well,
is.
Well, he's pulled that off.
Yes.
He has not. I don't think he's pulled off the...
No, but only he can complain about attention given his actions.
Yeah,
look
or
at me,
doing
look at
a documentary
me. Stop looking
on
at
Netflix.
Me.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Look at me. Look at me. Okay. Why are you staring at me?
Anyway, yeah. Back to you.
Oh, well. Do I believe even for a little bit that he's a one-year guy? If he plays well, he's not going anywhere. Who are we kidding?
Yeah, I that was exactly the conversation I had with Tausch today, because I'm in that camp. He thinks that if he plays well and they make the playoffs, don't win the Super Bowl, he'll hang it up because he didn't want to go out like he would have had he hung it up after
this guarantees he gets a last year parade.
Well, that was the other thing he always said. I don't want to go on some sort of like retirement tour, and then he goes out and says this will be my last year. Like, doesn't that cause the retirement tour? Yeah. He's a beaut. He's one of one. But as I was saying to Jim, Matt, and Molly on ESPN Madison, like seriously, like I don't know who he's got in his orbit, and he doesn't give a damn what I might say. But come on, man. Like, you have to see that saying, like, instead, here's what I suggested. Why don't you just talk about how amazing Brittany is? Right? Hey, maybe someday you guys will meet her. She doesn't want to, she's very private. She just wants to live her life. But God, I'm so lucky to have found her. You know, I've obviously had some pretty high profile relationships that didn't work out. But she gets me, and it's just, she makes it easy. Like when Tom Hanks describes his wife in Sleepless in Seattle, what a great opportunity for him to talk about his wife and how amazing she is and say, and I totally support her not wanting to be a public figure. You guys know, you know, I'm in the public eye all the time. I knew what I signed up for. That's not what she wants, but I'll tell you what, she could not be a better fit for me. I'm so lucky to have found her. Again, he's not interested in my advice. But that would have been much better than the sanctimonious, we want our privacy and we gave the finger to the paparazzi thing. Like, I wish someone in his life would say, dude, come on, man, you don't have to make it this hard. You just don't. It just doesn't have to be this way.
He's eliminated those people.
Yeah.
He's his own worst PR agent when it comes to stuff like that. That's for sure.
Right, and he doesn't. What frustrates me is that someone so galactically intelligent doesn't appreciate that. Like, he doesn't understand that. Like, you know, and again, Tom Fanning, who works on the Packers PR department, is outstanding, and he tried to go through the process of helping him avoid the immunized controversy and all those other things, and so. That's why we all need those people in our lives, whether it's Nancy True making sure that Homer's not a complete idiot, or Paula, or John, your wife. Like, that's why we have these people. And now he's found someone, apparently. And so I would hope that maybe she would have the influence, say, honey, that didn't help anything. Don't do that. But
well,
again,
tell me this,
I'm not sure.
Because we kind of assign this. He's smarter than everybody else, or so he thinks. Okay, so I think he's a smart guy. Do I think he could
figure
out the Saturn V rocket and put a man on the moon? I don't think so. But I think he's smarter than the average bear. But what I get lost is I don't think he's terribly interesting, and I think he feels he's super interesting. And that's where he loses. I'm like, dude, you're just your life isn't that interesting.
Yeah. That's interesting to me that you said that. That gives me pause and makes me think.
You want to go to dirt and say, cool, you're not that interesting. You want to go to the Egypt? A lot of people do. I get it. I'd like to see that. I don't know that that makes you super interesting. I don't, you know, you play football. There's a lot of guys that play football. I don't know. I think you're intelligent, but I don't know that your life is as interesting or you are as interesting as you think you are.
Yeah, I would just say that he and I have different philosophies. Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I would just say I always try to live by the credo that it's not necessarily what you do or, in this case, how interesting you think you are. The most important thing is how you make other people feel. And I've seen him do that during during many a time. But I haven't seen that in a while.
Yeah.
And I would love to see more of that and less of this.
He did that for my dad one time. It was amazing. And so I defended him for a long, long time. You know?
Evan Cohen and I, we talk every Tuesday, and he likes to joke that he and I don't see eye to eye on things, and that's true. But he put it the best way anyone has for me. He said, it's at the point where you have to explain your friendship with him. And I thought that was a really, really smart way to describe it, because the guy is still in there. I just, you know, like today, he is capable of being very interesting. I don't like condescension. I don't like sanctimonious. And, you know, look, there's so many other ways he could have gone, and he didn't. And I don't want to spend more time on him because, you know, we got more interesting things to talk about. But I just, every time that stuff happens, I just don't get it.
We're in the throes of the off season. Is it that interesting? Literally the most interesting thing, and because I was in Eugene, I didn't take it. I'm like, it seemed to me like, wow, Jair Alexander signed on the cheap. Like, how did the Packers not have $6 million?
Oh, they do. They just didn't want to give it to him. I mean, they really didn't. I get it. I understand it. They had enough. But I thought, you know, and kudos to KBN for having Jair's dad on. I thought Jair's dad delivered far more insight than anyone else has had on this, because we actually got that side of the equation. And you're right. Like, if it was going to cost, and Craig Karmazin and I had a really good debate about this on Sunday Karma, because I understand that Jair is difficult and there are drawbacks to him, and you can question how much he truly loves football and all those types of things. And he was talking about from a culture standpoint, you know, the price tag doesn't matter because he's not good for your culture. And what I would argue is that there is a price point if you feel strongly enough about your culture being able to absorb someone like that. Which, again, they did a pretty darn good job of it, and he seemed to be very happy during the first half of the season before he suffered the knee injury, and then people were questioning it, and his dad said it was misdiagnosed, which, again, I don't know about that. That's his opinion. But I didn't think he was problematic at all. And then he gets hurt in Jacksonville on October 27th, and that's when everything spiraled. But he was not... I know he said this to me, and he said it to Domofsky as well, that he thought that maybe that suspension was the best thing that ever happened to him because he was being such an idiot. Those were his words. And so, you know, the idea that he was such a cancer, you know, was he problematic after the knee injury? And did he, as Homer has pointed out, probably act out because he felt like his coach was leaving him out to dry instead of supporting him? Yeah, I think that was probably part of the equation. But my only point is, you know, where they're at a corner right now and the people that they're going to have to defend with that group, they are crossing their fingers and hoping, which is not a great strategy, that those guys are going to be up to the task. And all three of them, to varying degrees, are unproven, right? Keyshawn Nixon is unproven as a number one corner. He has certainly had some great moments and has proven to be a solid NFL starter at corner, right? Nate Hobbs hasn't even proven that he's anything more than a nickel guy at this point. And then Carrington Valentine is still a third-year player who must prove that he can be an every-down player and a starter and play at a high level. And so you have, and after that, it's a bunch of guys that have never played in the league. I mean, that when you're trying to cover Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison and Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jameson Williams, good luck. That's not going to be easy. And so my only point was, at the price point that he took from Baltimore to go play with Lamar Jackson, and with his dad saying on KBN that if that had been the Packers' offer, he would have stayed in Green Bay because he knew he had to take a pay cut because of all of his injuries. If they didn't want to pay him $4 million guaranteed, which is popcorn money, then that tells you everything you need to know. He was never coming back.
Yeah, I thought when I saw that, I'm like, wow, that tells us way more. We were talking like give him half or whatever. Like I thought, wow, that is really telling that you weren't willing to give that money. Then
yep.
I like, what were you dragging out? What were you dragging out? Because just let him go. None of that yep. made sense that you kept him around that long. If you were going to go for $6 million, then it, all the months before that then made no sense to me whatsoever.
And this was my point to Homer, is that if that was how you felt all along, this is why you need roster bonuses in March. Because it forces you to make a decision on players. If it's someone you want and it's a no-brainer, you take that roster bonus that's due the third day of the league year, you turn it into a signing bonus so you can spread out the cap charge, and you happily pay that amount. If it's a player that you're not so sure about, you use it as a negotiating point to say, hey, we'd like to guarantee you some of this, but we also would like you to take a little less than your base salary. And if they balk, then you let them go. And then if he's a guy that you just don't want, you don't pay it, and they're gone. And neither Elgton Jenkins nor Jair Alexander have that in their contracts, and that's how we ended up with their two situations that we have currently.
Yeah.
Thanks, well, Jason. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I was curious. Last year on the roster, they had two guys they had drafted in the first round to be cornerbacks in what is, by most admission, outside of cornerback and or the quarterback and left tackle. Like, it's a premier position. And they had two guys at number one there on the roster last year, and now they have neither of them and nothing but question marks. And like you said, and it's a passing league. So I feel like right now that's more crucial to their development and their success than Jordan Love.
Whoa.
I think that is something the two of you should explore further, because that's a great line.
It's going to be on the highlights put up by Pebble. Little salt.
Idea. All right, guys.
Thanks, Jason.
Take care. Be good.
Jason Woolley, All Packers All the Time, with 7-2.5, John Anderson. The salt will be featured. How long after the show will you get that salt up from John Anderson?
Probably within the hour.
Yeah. You never know week to week what it's going to be.
What was salty about that comment?
They had two. Now they have none.
That's true.
I didn't say it. I didn't say salty can't be true.
I didn't think it was salty. A year ago, they had two number one draft picks, and now they're both gone. And, you know, they got a bunch of guys that are question marks. I don't know that that's salty. That's simple.
I love it. You know, Pebble, what this means? He's even salty about me saying it's salty. Oh, baby, he's good.
You mischaracterize it, sure.
Yeah, like that's the first time. Next.
You're listening to the Homer Hour on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
Years ago, the Badger basketball team made a run in March that was magical. Wisconsin basketball made them believe. My title is, there was a moment I thought they were going to win the national championship. I guess that's too long. The event is Thursday. Join the stars from that squad as they remember and celebrate the run to Indy. Get your tickets to be part of the night. Orpheum Theater in Madison, Frank Kaminsky, Sam Decker, Josh Gosler, and yes, Bo Ryan, UWHoops2015.com, UWHoops2015.com. It is Thursday in Madison. Joined by John Anderson. Will it be salt or sugar this time? Do you have anything to add about the Milwaukee Brewers as a team? I'm assuming, as you're a great Brewers fan, that you are happy with the way they're playing.
Yeah, they can. I tell you what, it's been years of on this budget and the way they operate that they continue to just be in the mix I was a little bummed last night. Golly, why? At home, and you get the Pirates. And I get baseball. You only win 60% of your games if you're great.
One out of 162, buddy. Come on.
Yep. Listen, I'm one of the few people to sacrifice. I worked with so many people that went to the – and I'm like, we're trying to get out of there. It's 2 in the morning. It's extra innings. Lose the game. There's one tomorrow. You can be fine. Now that I am not constrained by that, I can be upset. But – no, they're just an amazing ball club that they managed to win all. You look at the batting average; they don't have anybody that's just some bell cow in the middle of the lineup that can carry them for a week, or at least nobody that has shown that. And yet they managed to do enough. But I think that's where you get in trouble in the postseason, is then you got to, you know, you can't just rely strictly on ability. You got to hope that you're having one of those good weeks, which is where sometimes I think they fall down. But they've got my attention. Every once in a while, I'm like, okay, this is going to go bad. I'm going to have to just go root for the Dodgers. They're the easiest. And about the time I think that, then they reel them off and they're 6-7 games, 500. They're right there where the, you know, close on the
Cubs. They're in the fight. They're in the fight for the wild card. Yeah.
In the fight all the time against teams. Like, look who else is in the fight.
I know.
Right? San Diego spends a ton.
Right.
Either the, you know, the Mets or the Phillies, pick one, because they've been kind of toggling at the top of the NL East. And they're in it, and it's amazing. And the Cardinals, even on the cheap, people around here are stunned at the Cardinals. They are so mad. They think the Cardinals went full out on the cheap, aren't trying to win.
And they're
since
doing
they are America's great baseball fans, they don't like to have that where it is. And
they might be doing better than they thought. Fourth quarter, 7-2 and a half next.
Welcome back to the Homer Hour on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
Fisco Auto Body, so you'll like me. It doesn't start that way, but it finishes that way. Fisco Auto Body on Forest Home in Franklin. On Forest Home in Franklin, how can they be so good that I tell everybody to go there? It's a family business. Owned since 1931. It's not what they do. It's who they are, and it's still in the family. So imagine at what age the Fiscos were working on cars and how many years they have. That's why they're so good. Expert workmanship guaranteed for the life of your vehicle. Fisco Auto Body on Forest Home in Franklin. You'll love them, and then eventually you'll love me and thank me for telling you about Fisco. Fisco, Fisco, Fisco. To remember the name, it's John Anderson. The highlight will be his comment about the two first-round picks that are gone, unless you have something else that you would like to highlight your performance today.
I don't know if I have anything to highlight. It's funny, the old Bucks that are making news. I didn't think I could feel bad for a guy who got paid $33 million, but the Middleton, they picked up his options. He's going to have to be a Wizard again, is awful. That guy deserves better. And then how about Drew Holiday? He's going to end up in Portland on a team that's not any good anyway, but at least he got his title title with the Celtics. But I tell you what, guys get old and you can't win with the same group all the time. You got to make some moves. But I don't know if the Bucks ever had two better guys and two better teammates on a roster. And part of the reason they won the championship was the character of those two guys. And so I hope they do really well in the upcoming season. But I think they're going to be in two really bad spots.
True. But perfect to remember, as you said, think of the top three players for the Bucks when they win the title and how great they were. And now everybody loves them as much as a person as a player. It doesn't happen that it doesn't happen very often. I'll have to go look at the top three somewhere else. I wanted to ask
guys,
what?
Yeah, I was just gonna say I think they get remembered all time as great Bucks, and people will always appreciate them and their contributions, even as sort of the, you know, they traded them away, and which wasn't always popular. And Middleton's gonna lose a lot more games, Holiday at least won a championship. But I just think those guys should always be I keep watching them because I guess I feel like I'm still always going to be attached to them in some way.
They're dead to me now. But I still love them and think that they're just so special. All right, here's my question. What do you remember about this year's finals? And I will remember the sadness of how great Game 7 could have been if he hadn't gotten hurt. There was a chance for one of the great Game 7 finishes. I don't know that anybody knew at that time who was going to win. In fact, it's very easy to say Indiana could have won, and Oklahoma City was lucky. They were lucky to win it the way they did. It's not their fault, but that's my sadness of what we lost because of that injury. I don't know where you are.
It is unfortunate he got hurt, right? And it's even more unfortunate he's going to miss a whole other season because they pushed
him. Yeah, he shouldn't have come back and played.
Oklahoma City would have won that game by the same number of points if he was in the game or not in the game.
Really?
At home, game seven. They've shown
Did you that. Watch okay. the beginning of the game?
Yep.
Oklahoma and you City still believe?
Would have won. That simple. Oklahoma City was a better team. He's going to win game seven.
Because it was...
It's a convenient excuse. It's great. Makes everybody in Indiana feel better. Oklahoma City was going to win the game. And they would have won by double digits, just like they did.
We're going to have to discuss that next week.
Okay.
I want more.
I'll be here to defend it.
On the Tee, Wisconsin Country Club. Next.